A beacon shining in the night, faster than a bolt of light, cloaked but hiding in plain sight.
Their mission, to help the Green Arrow fight the darkness, corruption, and bring hope.
We are strong.
We are men.
We are the Arrow Squad.
Hi, this is Stephen Amell.
Hi, I'm Juliana Harkavy, and you're listening to Arrow Squad with Tammy the Chameleon and my favorite, Martin the Flash.
And listen to this, or my fiction or alter ego will hunt you down. Enjoy.
And enjoy we will. Welcome back to Arrow Squad, episode 175, season 8, episode 7, entitled Purgatory. That is so ominous. Flash, are you feeling the ominous vibes?
I am feeling all the vibes, and thank you for taking the lead on that, Cammy. Flash is really fighting a cough this week, guys, so I am going to be fighting with the mute button so you guys don't have to deal with it. But just in case, just so you know, yes, Purgatory, Cammy. My gosh, I was wondering about this episode. Purgatory, we know we're going back to Lea and you. What are they bringing for us this episode? But before we get into it, we got a little bit of news, a little couple things we want to talk about, right?
Yes, we do.
All right, so guys, a lot of people have been asking on our Facebook page and stuff, you know, is Arrow Squad going to do a special episode for the crisis and stuff? So we want to just let you know what's going on behind the scenes. There is a discussion with some of the other podcasts to do a roundtable discussion with a bunch of the hosts after the first three episodes have aired, because then we're going to have a long break. So there's talks about that. But then me and Cammy were also discussing that if Arrow characters are heavily involved in these first three episodes, then next week on Thursday, we will come back at you with a regular time slot special Arrow Squad episode discussing what has happened to our Arrow characters. So just keep that in mind. If Arrow's involved, we'll be back. And if not, we'll let you know and we'll see about that roundtable discussion instead.
Yes, we will be tracking our Arrow characters in particular. And if you're curious how they're faring in other parts of the crossover, or if you're watching the other parts of the crossover and you'd like to chat about Arrow specifically, we may have a little mini episode to discuss that if they're front and center.
Exactly. All right. Ratings and impressions. Are we ready for that?
We are. How about you kick us off for this one? I'm curious what you thought of this. We have the Purgatory episode. You have unfortunately fallen ill, but it's very well timed for a Purgatory week. And yeah. I'm curious what you thought.
Well, I'm giving this one 7.5 Islands of Reminder. And that title makes me laugh because I feel like I'm playing Dungeons and Dragons or something. It sounds like a term from there. Now, okay, Cammy. I'm actually bitter, like super bitter.
Ooh, bitter, you know, Flash. It's kind of like salty Cammy.
Yeah, it's kind of my turn. Although it's only for a second, and it's only jokingly, sort of. But that tease in the opening sequence with Oliver Queen talking about his situation, and they show us Deathstroke's helmet stuck on the stake with the arrow through it, and then there's no payoff. That pissed me off. And that tells me he won't be making an appearance at all, which then leads me to think that they just couldn't get Manu Bennett for some reason. And that is unfortunate. But don't you dare tease us by showing his helmet and not having him on this episode. That was unfortunate and that was unfair. Instead, you have some other guy in a yellow and black Deathstroke-looking mask, and there's just nothing behind it. That part really disappointed me. So now that that's out of the way, on to the fun stuff. We did get Yao Fei, and at least he showed up, and that was pretty awesome to see. It's like he never left. He had the same cool charisma, the same, I've been surviving on this island for the last 12 years since you left, Oliver, and I'm still here. I don't know, there was just something about him. It was really, really cool. Now this episode, though, it was a bit of a mixed bag for me. I thought being back on the island was really going to pull in some stuff from the first season and show us why all of Arrow is ending there on Lea and You. But the idea seemed to fizzle as it went on. They had this grand idea, but then they went nowhere with it, as it became more about building a weapon that wasn't really a weapon, and this episode just got weaker as it went. Now, the saving grace of the whole thing was the beginnings of the farewells with everybody. They're really emotional ones. They're really emotional one-on-ones with Oliver and each character as he's starting to say goodbye to them and making sure he says the things that he really wants to say, because that's part of the lessons that he's learning. That's what ultimately brought tears and correcting kind of the flailing path that this episode was on, because it really had nothing to it. There was really there was a lot going on, but there wasn't any weight to it. Anyway, we'll talk more about it. That's just my opening speech, and that's where I kind of land at a 7.5.
Yeah, I can't really disagree with you on that. I agree both on what the strengths were and on what the weaknesses were. And I've given it, I guess, a pretty similar rating, 7.3 out of 10. I did like the strength, and you touched on this, the focus on Oliver and his kids, his brotherhood with Diggle and Roy, and they really centered the story on him, as they have done for the last couple episodes, but specifically on kind of emotional ramp-up moments leading into what we can only suspect will be some action-heavy episodes. Much of this episode was monologue points. And I think that was executed at the right time in the season, but it does leave us with an episode that's not very plot heavy. It's setting rich, it's character rich, but it's not plot heavy, and that's okay. It was an exciting episode for me, but structurally it was a wrap up. And I'm left after the episode mostly excited to see the outcome for Lila, and, you know, rightfully dreading the likely outcome for the Queens. Overall, I think it was a good ramp up and wrap up simultaneously, but it wasn't really a lot of plot.
No, not at all. That ties in exactly what I was trying to say. It just, they had this grand idea and they just didn't bring enough back. I mean, having Yao Fei was a little bit, but just that scientist fires, which I'm sure we'll talk about, who cares? He really had nothing to do. Like, I didn't even remember him. So why are they bringing him back? There was no weight to that situation. And then, you know, not having Slade there, and just, it just, they lost their way really quick with this episode, with the plot and the storyline of it. And even the fight sequence, even that big stretch out, there was something left to be desired there too. It was lacking. It just, the timing of the slow motion was really poor. Like, when you watch the slow motion scenes, there's nothing actually happening in the slow motion. You want to usually show something really cool. That's why you're slowing it down. But during these slow motion moments, there wasn't actually anything that cool happening. So I don't know. It's unfortunate that this is our last one before Crisis, and it kind of falls flat a little bit.
Yeah. I personally do appreciate some of the character-rich moments, and I can see from our favorite moments that we had some of those in common. So for me, I think I was willing to overlook the lack of plot, but I do recognize it as a steep weakness.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I said it brought it back. Like, it saved itself in the end with all of the farewells, with the one-on-one character interactions, like you've been saying. It's just, it really had some wonderful moments. And again, I mean, Stephen Amell's performance, and even the girl playing Mia and William and Roy, especially.
Kat McNamara.
I can always remember her last name. Yeah, they all had such wonderful performances that really brought it around. And I was like, wow, okay, this is good stuff. These guys are really, really pulling on each other's emotion. And it's great stuff.
Yeah. Well, before we get too far into that, because I'm pretty excited to chat about that with you, let's take a look at our feedback from last week, which was our blog post comment from Aaron. And I will take this moment to say our blog post did go up a little bit late in this last week. There were some technical issues with the site, as well as some travel delays because of Thanksgiving in America. So here we are now. We are back, and I do suspect this week's episode will be on time. But Aaron, who was very gracious to comment after our late post, said that her favorite part of last week was by far and away Lila. And kind of jumping in the middle of her post here, She says, Lila is the only real anti-hero currently in the Arrowverse. Still, there's people who could be antis, heroes, or villains, but for some reason, the series doesn't go all in with them in that progression. She references Siren in particular with this episode. She earlier in her post says she hated with a passion everything the show did with Siren. She says she could have been such a good villain or anti-villain at least, but no, they have to try to make her Laurel 1.0. Sigh. She says, they did Siren so dirty in this episode. I will never believe she cares that much about this Lance, as he's not her dad. He didn't even respect her wishes as a person. He tried to make her his dead daughter. So why should she be saying goodbye to him? I hate them redeeming her like this. She goes on to say that she agrees with you, Flash. She would not call Lila a villain. Not a clear one, anyways. And she says if Oliver can forgive Renee, then he should forgive Lila for any wrongs he thinks she's done to them. And she also agrees with me that she wishes Siren was still a villain. And she mentions, because we started to get into the scheduling of the crossover, and we'll touch on that a bit more later in this week's episode, that she doesn't understand the logic of the scheduling either.
Well, it's rare that she agrees with me, so that's a fun note.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of the other pieces mm-hmm. she has to say, and she has some good points comparing it to Supergirl as well. So if you want to read more of Aaron's thoughts, those are following our blog post this week.
Yeah. And now let's get into some of the good stuff for this episode. I'm sorry that I kind of came off with a bit of a rant, but you know what? That's out of the way. Now we got some good stuff because we got some favorite moments here, which I think were, and looking at the one that you picked, Cammy, I was going to put that one in here if you didn't. So we've got some good stuff. We're going to do them in chronological order because there was some powerful, powerful scenes amongst the characters. So let's get into those. So the first one, this is just an intense scene. And that was with Roy when we see him pinned under the wreckage from the airplane. Super intense, holy crap, hold your breath type of moment. The music was pounding. The weight of the situation just felt so urgent. And I'm just going to play it because it blew me away.
We're about to have company. Not the good kind.
We can hold them all.
The fuel's about to spark, John. We don't have time.
Then we can crash it, Dinah.
Dad, we are out of options.
We're not out of options. I don't accept that.
We don't have a choice.
We always have a choice, Connor.
Then I'll make it. Do it. Just cut me free.
You're right, John. It's better my arm than our lives. Get the kid.
Here, you apply the tourniquet. I'll get ready.
Okay, just hold on.
This will be over fast. Am I gonna feel it?
Probably. I'm with you, Roy. I'm with you.
Okay? You ready? Do it.
Oh my God, I feel for Roy.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, just intense. We have not had an edge of your seat, hold your breath, tense moment like that in a while. And that, a couple things I want to talk about with that scene, because that cutting his arm off, I thought, wow, why are they doing that? Like, that takes Roy out of the equation. He can't help. He can't fight. What's going on? And then I realized, oh yeah. This is right out of the comic books. Roy has, I don't know, you want to call it a robotic arm, but he has some type of prosthetic that gives him extra strength. And that's why he changes his name to Arsenal. And it's just great. They're just following part of the comic storyline, which I thought was really good. But this was such a shocking moment. And then the next thing that it led me to think about was this changes the future, because in the future he has both of his arms. Well, guess what?
Exactly.
This is proof that they are changing the future, because this is a major difference.
Absolutely. And I think this is something that the producers in charge of this have said they've been wanting to do since, they say, you know, day one, since Roy has arrived. That was such a quintessential piece of his DC Comics storyline. So it's exciting that they got a chance to do it before the show itself ends. Yeah. We're not saying necessarily that Roy will end because there is the spinoff.
Yeah. And you know what I'm hoping is, because he had mentioned right later in the episode, he said he's got friends at Argus that can help him with an arm. So I'm hoping they fix him up in time for the crisis and he does get to participate at least a little bit sometime, at least in the Arrow episode. I'd like to see him there. That'd be great.
Yeah, I hope so. We'll see. I'll get into it more in the discussion, but I really did enjoy Roy in this episode.
Yeah. All right. What do you have for your favorite scene? That's next.
Well, I think mine might be a bit predictable. I picked the moment that this is referencing as my favorite moment in the episode where it occurred, and then my favorite moment in all of last season, which was when Felicity talks William through seeing his dad as a hero. This occurred, I want to say it was middle, but not even mid-season of last season. And it's this really beautiful scene where she is directing a pretty large mission while simultaneously monologuing a bit about what heroism is for Oliver and what that means for the people who love him. And William mentions that in this week's episode in a talk with Mia, which I think is a really beautiful scene as well. So here it is.
Get out of my way.
William.
Look, it is okay for you to be afraid of losing him, especially after the way that you left things.
You don't know what you're talking about.
This is exactly what happened with Felicity. You were angry with her, but you still wanted to save her.
I'm not just gonna sit here and do nothing, okay? I will not leave him alone out there. I will not let him die. I let myself believe for just a minute that I could actually have my dad.
I was a kid. I spent a lot of time pushing him away because I never thought that I could lose him. And then he disappeared.
Yeah, now we might lose him again. How are you so calm?
I'm not, but when I was little, Felicity had me down in that bunker watching Dad out in the field, and I saw that he could shoot death more than anyone. But if this really is the end, I don't want to waste the time that I have left with him being angry. You.
Oh, and there's those performances.
Such a tearjerker scene, and yeah. So well played as well. The delivery from William, the actor who plays William, was so well done. If you consider that, it wasn't him back in that scene before. It was the actor playing the younger version of him. Mm-hmm. But he so convincingly delivers that, he was there.
He was there.
You enjoyed this one too, right?
Yeah, it's his performance. He's got the shake in his voice. He's got the emotion welling up. He can't contain it. And he doesn't want to let Mia go out there. He's also trying to protect her, where she's always protecting him. This is his moment to stand up and protect her. It's such a great moment between the two of them, and even her, like, she's tearing up. And yeah, powerful stuff. This was the good stuff of this episode.
Absolutely, I agree.
Now I'm going to follow that with another Roy scene, because this one, just again, Roy I think really stood out as very heroic this episode. He sacrificed his arm to save the team. Later in this scene, him and Diggle are having a discussion. Diggle comes in to apologize because he feels like it's his fault that Roy is even here and now lost his arm. And Colton's like, it's not you. I don't blame you. Like, some heroes have to make sacrifices. This just happens to be mine. We'll figure it out. It's a great moment between these two. And I think Colton really, really pulled out an all-star performance here. And I just really appreciated him throughout this entire episode. So here's that scene.
Just came by to check on you. How you feeling?
I've been better.
I'm so sorry, Roy. I should have found another way to get you out.
This wasn't your fault.
That's where you're wrong.
wouldn't even be in this situation if I hadn't come to find you in Obsidian. Right. I can't protect the people I care about.
You know, I worked with you and Oliver for a really long time. Yet if I've learned anything, it's that this team has each other's backs no matter the cost. Things just didn't exactly go as planned.
That's an understatement.
No, but I would rather be here. I would rather be here with you and with the team and back in Hub City, living a life all alone. Heroes make sacrifices, John. And for better or for worse, this just had to be mine.
Colton's amazing.
It was another very well delivered sort of narrative piece.
Yeah, which is like you touched on in your opening monologue. That's what the strongest parts of this episode were these moments between the characters, which now we got one last one, and this kind of plays like your scene. This is the one with Oliver and William, and it's just them having a moment together when Oliver is feeling guilty for not being there for him, and William's letting him know, I've already forgiven you. It's okay, Dad. I love this moment between the two of them, so here it is.
You know, Felicity gave this to me. She told me it was a symbol of reconnection. She was right.
She normally is. No, you keep it. William, what you were able to do, you're a hero.
Oh, I had a pretty good example.
It means a lot to me that I've had a chance to see the type of man you've become. I hope you'll forgive me for lots of things eventually.
Dad, I already have. I mean, I know for you, I only left a year ago. For me, it's been 20 years. And back then, when I was a kid, I didn't understand what it meant to fight for something bigger than yourself. But now I do. I'm really proud of you, Dad.
Not as proud as I am of you.
I'm gonna hug you now.
You better.
Oh, that music brings tears every time.
That music reminds me of, like, British epic movies, you know, like Harry Potter or The Railway Children or something like that. Yeah. I don't know if anybody else knows the genre I'm talking about. Narnia.
Yeah. It brings the feels. And
they
deserve an award just for the background music this season, for sure.
The music on this show is so solid and so far above what would be, you know, necessary quality for a superhero TV show. It's a bit above and beyond.
Yeah. And that scene, I mean, William is just, what a great kid. He really turned out to be something special. And I just love that he gets to have these moments with his dad as an adult to tell him, I forgive you, Dad. I understand everything now, Dad. You don't have to worry about it. I don't want you to regret anything before the sacrifice that you're about to make. It's such a good moment with them.
Yeah, it's really special. And we should get more into the discussion of it in our discussion points, don't you think?
I think so.
All right, let's dive right in. And the biggest and most important category this week, of course, is a subset of Team Arrow, the queens and guests, as I've put it. We see Oliver and the team, mostly his family, return to this quote-unquote hellish island. Those who've been around forever heard that phrase a lot in the intro. And last week on the podcast, we were speculating about whether the island itself would be the teacher or whether we would get yet another teacher. And you and I were hoping for Slade, of course. And we finally see the outcome of that. Yao Fei returns. What did you think of his presence in the season at this stage?
Well, we definitely called that because we brought his name up, so we will take credit for that. And like I said, it's I'm glad that he was there. It's just they should have brought us more. But with Yao Fei being there, he's really the one that started this whole journey for Oliver. He's the first one to save him, the first one to teach him survival skills and get him on his feet and start changing Oliver's perspective on life. Because Oliver was a spoiled, rich party brat when he landed there. So I give Yao Fei all the credit for igniting this path to becoming the Green Arrow. And to have him there, it makes sense. It brings it full circle. Right from the opening premiere episode, we meet Yao Fei. So this it brings the whole show full circle. And what I felt with Yao Fei in this episode is he just brought this sense of he understands Oliver like he always did. And he understands who Oliver is now. And he was still even able to see through to him and see, you still haven't learned everything that you're supposed to learn. Listen to me now. This is what you need to know and what you need to do for you to complete this journey. It's almost like Yao Fei had seen the future from the monitor or something. He already knows what's coming and he knows what Oliver needs. And I just loved his wisdom again. He's got a whole different style of presenting wisdom and a lesson to Oliver, different than Anatoly does, different than Diggle does. It was really, really good to bring it full circle here.
It's interesting. Well, I agree, but at the same time, it seemed like Yao Fei was more giving him information than teaching him a lesson. I felt like the lesson learned this week mostly fell on Oliver's kids, and Yao Fei was offering Oliver some wisdom and guidance, but not really something new to learn. Did you get something else from that? Did you get a lesson for Oliver at this stage?
Yeah, you know, kind of maybe a little bit of both. I think Yao Fei was trying to open his eyes and, you know, instead of trying to react, like when they're caught in the net traps and Oliver's just trying to cut the rope with his knife, and Yao Fei's like, just breathe, have patience. The answers will be shown to you if you just wait. Quit running and gunning and being so sporadic and just reacting by emotion. I think that's what he's trying to teach Oliver. Like, you've still got to pull yourself back, because Oliver is reacting. I've got to get back to my family. I got to get back to my team. We're in trouble. Just sit back, relax. You'll figure a way out of it. That's what he's trying to teach him. At the same time, helping him realize you need to spend time with your kids. You need to stop worrying about all this other stuff that's out of your control. Spend these moments with your kids while you have them. That's what the monitor is giving you.
Yeah, and they kind of started to touch on that last week with the concept of time being a gift as well. Right. We see that as the gift Oliver really receives this episode is time with his family. And we see that through Mia and William. They've continued to bond. It's almost startling to remember that they did just meet a couple weeks ago, I guess, in their time, a couple months ago. They've bonded through this chaos, and eventually it's interesting. At the end of the episode, Oliver makes the decision that he wants Felicity to raise them together. Mm-hmm. Previously, he was more concerned with the security of the two children. That's why he had Felicity and himself keep them apart, and he had William with his grandparents, and they were raising Mia in seclusion. Why do you think that changed? I definitely love the idea of Mia and William being raised together, and Felicity is, of course, the best person for the job. But I believed in their rationale before about keeping the kids safe.
Yeah. Well, I'm with you. I believed in it as well. And I think what changed is that he now understands it being apart is the wrong answer. That's not what helps anybody. He needs them to grow up together because he sees how much they need each other now in this time of crisis. And he realizes that being away from them all that time, what it's done to everybody. So he wants to alter that part of the future as well. Make sure my kids grow up together. They need to grow up together. They need that bond. They need that protection with each other. They need each other no matter what. And it also helps Felicity too, because she gets to have her family. That's what's changed.
It's definitely what she would have wanted as well, and that's what's kind of nice about the decision. It was interesting to me because it indicates a change in Oliver, in that security is not necessarily the top priority. And no. I wonder if that's then the change for himself that we'll see reflected in his decisions during crisis. We talked about in our favorite moments, Mia and William, but particularly Mia, they're struggling with the idea that they could lose Oliver, speaking of the crisis. Do you feel that the resolution in this episode for the kids is just continuing to lead to Oliver's death by building towards their acceptance? Is it that simple?
It sure feels like it. And I think we were talking about this last week as well. They're preparing the characters on the show, but they're also preparing us, the viewers, to accept that he has to die and accept that that's the way it has to go. And I've seen a lot of talk online that people are saying at this point in time, he has to die now. They can't have a different outcome. They're building up towards it and kind of preparing us for it. So it kind of has to happen. And I kind of agree with that. I don't want Oliver to die. I want him to have some type of miracle change in the end. Like he goes off into a different realm of reality and he gets to live out his life with Felicity, you know, whatever, that's fine. I think it has to happen. I think they have to accept it. That's what the show is drawing towards everybody. That's why he's preparing his team, getting everybody ready that this is going to happen. And I don't think we would have this much emotional buildup, all these musical notes, all these farewells, all this passage of time that we're getting of him getting to say goodbye and say the things he's needed to say if they're not going to, you know, kill him off in the end.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you at all. And I know that that's kind of the predominant sentiment online as well. I do have, I guess, some theories for how they could avoid killing him if they had to. I will sort of jump ahead just a tiny bit. I know we're going to get into villains at the end. Lila indicated in this episode that everything the monitor says is a test. And I was wondering if that could include his vision of Oliver's death. That he tells Oliver he'll die, but that's a test as well. And Oliver still may have to, quote unquote, die the way Felicity died and that she left at the end of last season, but he's still continuing to exist somewhere else, likely with her. It's sort of a warped happily ever after mixed with death. That's I guess, my theory.
That's actually a very plausible one, though, because he does have to go, so he is still getting to say goodbye to everyone, and he has to leave. That's the price he is paying. That's the sacrifice he's making. So I would be okay with that. That would make sense to me and be acceptable. Interesting where you pulled that from.
Yeah, it's just a theory. So, you know, I'm like you said, I've accepted that he might die as well and that we may not get a happy ending, and that's perfectly fine. I hope for a happy ending for the kids, if nothing else. But there are some ways where it may not be quite as cut and dry. But that's for the future.
Yeah.
For this episode, we have this interesting setting of Leon Yu. And, of course, one of the most lasting outcomes of the island visit was the loss of Roy's arm. We already kind of touched on this, and that you enjoyed the fact that this was a comic relevant storyline and how it was done. Did you like how it played out after the fact and how Roy handled the loss?
Yeah, I mean, that I was saying this was very heroic for Roy. I mean, it's not like he had any choice in the situation, that they got shot out of the sky, which was crazy to me, a missile taking the plane out. I did not see that coming. That was quite a shock, holy crap moment. And the fact that all three of them barely survived, I loved how he handled it, though. He, especially when he was pinned, like we heard in the clip, and he said, better my arm than the entire team, get me out of here. And then later in the tent with Dickel, he's just like, this is a hero sacrifice. Sometimes we have to. This happens to be my sacrifice. He couldn't have handled it any better than that. Other people would be crying and freaking out and angry at whatever, and he handled it like a true hero would. And that again just leads to how much he idolizes Oliver and him being a hero, and he's trying his best to be as much like Oliver as he can.
Absolutely. I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, Roy was one of my favorites, and it wasn't just because he was given a pretty strong and dramatic storyline and executed it well, but it's because of the values that the character represented. Mm-hmm. And we've seen bits and pieces of that ever since he's returned. We see the payoff of him having been around this team since the early days. And in the early days, he wasn't this wise. He wasn't this heroic quite yet. And no. Now he has. So that character change over time, it's really impressive to see. And I'm happy to see that they very conclusively, through him, shown that the future has been changed. He's not at all on the trajectory that we saw him on in the fake future.
Yeah. No, you're right. Totally right.
Well, while the mission on the island may have been something of a test, the outcomes were real, like the loss of the arm, and the danger of the island was palatable. I know we talked about there not being heavy plot or action. It still did feel pretty high danger. Mm-hmm. What did you think of seeing the 2040 kids and, you know, Oliver and Diggle's kids on the island where it all began? Did you feel like they were small children who needed to be protected in this scary world, or did they fit right in?
No, I think they fit in. I think it could be looked at as a little bit odd because they're the only ones that hadn't been there before. I mean, well, I guess William was. We had already said last week William was there when he was a kid during the Prometheus season. But having them there as adults, I like it because it just closes the book or closes the chapter on the bits and pieces about their dad's past that they don't know about. And this just makes it real for them instead of, because Mia, she said a couple times in this episode about, I've grew up hearing the stories about my dad being a hero and da da this and that. That's all she knows is stories. Her being there makes all of those stories come to life and everything seems totally real to her. And that makes it acceptable to her, and that allows her to understand her father and allows her to figure out how he came to be the hero that he is now. It's great. It's great for them. It just gives a nice complete wrap up to their family storyline that they now all can see what Oliver went through. So it was great.
Yeah, I agree. It was a little scary seeing them out there because now that we know the future can change, you know, we could lose any of these kids at any point.
Yeah.
But it's such a perfect setting for Arrow to start its conclusion on. And arguably they've been concluding all season. I know Flash and I were kind of joking before the podcast started, looking at the episode titles following Crisis for Arrow. Sounds like finale after finale, just continual conclusion style titles for the episode. Yeah. And arguably it's been concluding this entire time for, I guess, 7 episodes now. So we'll see what happens with what the kids have learned on this island and whether they're going to set this up to be them joining an island of their own in some weird way when they return to the future.
Yeah. And one thing I wanted to say about Laurel with them being on the island, like she had one really powerful line here when her and Oliver were off walking through the trees, and she didn't agree with his choices he was making. And she says, "Oliver, don't leave this island with more regrets than you left buried here." And that was such a powerful line. And you could see the reaction in his face. She hit a note, a very sensitive note, and it got through to him. That was a great line. And it really tied into a lot of what's happened in his journey through all of these 8 seasons. And that's why this episode happened on Lee and You, because it brought back everything that had happened to him and what he buried there and the lessons he had to learn. Just, it brought so much back. And just Laurel saying that one line really was like the icing on the cake, I think, for the whole situation that we have with this episode.
Yeah, it was very poignant. Mm-hmm. Well, I already borrowed a few questions from our little team village section. Team villain, I should say. Team village. Team villain. section. But let's dive back in. I don't think we've had enough villain talk for this week. Lila, most importantly, has completed, maybe, her transition to Harbinger.
Yeah.
What did you think of that storyline this week?
it was interesting. It was good, but it was still, I think I was feeling like Diggle and like the other characters. I was feeling a bit shocked by it because she seems drawn to this. I could see some separation from her no longer being Lila, the loving, caring, kick-ass leader of Argus. You could see her transitioning to the Monitor's mission is the only thing that matters now. And it doesn't matter who's going to get hurt or what's going to happen to people. She's got to complete this mission. That she's drawn to that. And you could see that when she grabs the sphere and turns it on. And she just looks at them and says, I have to go. And she just looks at John. She doesn't even smile. She just looks at him like, I'm out of here, and walks away from him. It was an interesting transition. And then when she shows up again, she's no longer Lila. She even says that that's no more. I am now the harbinger of what's to come. So has he changed? Has the Monitor changed her, who she is as a being, as a person? She is now Harbinger, and that erases her past with Diggle. That's what I'm wondering about. And I found it very interesting, but I found it a little bit shocking too.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what direction they would go with Harbinger, right? That was one of the things we were most excited to theorize about when the season was first starting. Mm-hmm. We didn't know if that would be part of Lila's current character, or if, you know, we even talked about it potentially being some sort of weird doppelganger situation.
Yeah.
And here we see it's almost like she's been mind controlled. And
yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. I personally jokingly referring to myself as the leader of the Lila Michaels defense squad. I feel obligated to defend her actions because I think that she is not a villain and has a good rationale for a lot of what she's done. And that has got her into this position where the Monitor has taken over her. But given what we know about the Monitor, he could theoretically take over anyone. So I don't see that as her fault, per se. And that is my Lila Michaels defense for this week.
Yeah.
Audrey also, the actress who plays Lila, did a fantastic job, I will say. It's a pretty kind of unique and interesting storyline to play, and she's done it very well.
No, she did. She did a really good performance. To be able to pull herself away from, like I said, from being the caring Lila into that almost cold, mind-controlled automaton almost. That, yeah, I mean, great change in her behavior. I don't know how else to word it. You saw a switch change.
And yeah.
She was no longer Lila. So well done. Yeah.
Yeah. One obvious lead into Crisis was also the end of the episode. We had that little Harrison Wells or Harrison Wells's clone. You never really know. What did you think of that as an Arrow episode inclusion?
Well, they've used the same clip at the end of all of the Arrowverse shows this week, which is exactly what they did last year with last year's crossover event. They played the same clip for each one. And it's fine. It's just, if you're not a Flash viewer and you only watch Arrow, you're probably wondering what the heck's going on. You have no connection to it. But then again, I'm also not worried about that because I think almost everybody that's part of this Arrowverse watches all of the shows, or at least a couple of them. I don't know. I wish they would have had a little more Arrow-esque ending and lead in to the Crisis. And
I agree.
I wish they did a little bit more with Supergirl. I wish they did a little. I mean, it truly was a Flash ending. So playing the same clip over and over again, it didn't really jive. It didn't. I'd already seen it three times. So here, you know. Or twice, yeah. I guess. But yeah. Yeah.
I wish they would do just slightly different variations at least on it. And I think that's what you were starting to say as well, where it's specific at least a little bit to each show.
Yeah.
It was such a sharp contrast from Arrow, but it is a fair depiction that something that's not strictly Arrow is to come.
Yeah. It has to do with the Monitor, obviously, and it has to do with what this Nash Wells character becomes. We know he's going to become somebody else. It leads into all of that, and it leads into what's going to happen on the Crisis event with that character, but it just wasn't Arrow-related, and it really, we didn't need to see it. I could have done with that those extra 35, 40 seconds of scenes with Oliver.
Yeah. I think the big piece for Arrow within the crisis will be really just centered around Oliver's sacrifice, likely his death.
Yeah.
Was there something you were hoping to see for other characters from Arrow who may be in the crisis? I know you touched a bit on what you'd like to see if Roy were included, for example.
I hope they all get to be involved. Like just talking about Dinah and Renee, for instance, I mean, they've hardly been in this season at all. This was the most they've been part of any episode so far. And I really liked, while I'm touching on them, I liked at the end their little farewell moment when Oliver comes to say, hey, thank you two for being here. And they're like, what, is this some kind of farewell? And, Renee says, this ain't over yet. And I just like that. I love their loyalty to him now, to the team. That part I appreciate. I don't care about the history with Renee and all the ups and downs we've had with them. I just like this moment with those three because the last two seasons, it's basically been those three and Felicity. That's been the team. So it's nice that they get to have a moment like that. So I hope they are a little more part of the crisis event. We get to see them at least have a few lines, get to be part of the fight. That would be cool. Yes, I want to see Roy. I want to see Roy come in as Arsenal with his arm and get to fight alongside Oliver. I'd love to have him be in a mentor and sidekick kind of moment in a fight. That would be awesome. Do we see Diggle transition into Green Lantern? I know there's all kinds of people talking about that. You know, does he get to be a alternate Earth, an Earth 28 Diggle who is Green Lantern? Who knows? I don't know. There's lots of stuff like that. I just hope they're all there. I hope our entire cast gets to have one little moment. There's five episodes, so they should at least get a piece of it.
Yeah, that would be nice. Mm-hmm. I'm not entirely certain how much Arrow will be represented in the crossover and how many Arrow characters will be in there and what their storyline will be exactly. I know Flash and I touched on at the beginning of the episode that we're kind of waiting to see what happens with that to determine even if we, do a review of the first three episodes. So I'm interested to see. I'll definitely be watching regardless.
Yeah. And actually, before I forget, there's something I meant to talk about with Roy way back in our favorite moments. There was some stuff that I loved about him. Not only did he have powerful performance and some great scenes with Oliver and with Diggle in this, did you notice he had the funniest lines of the episode? There wasn't much to laugh at, but he had the one-liner zingers that cracked me up every time. Like when William first tried to turn on the ball and he just says, doesn't look like it turned on. And, when it fizzles out the second time, he's like, well, that was anticlimactic. And then when they're leaving the tent at the end, he's like, yeah, no more island vacations as he's walking out of the tent. He had these just little offhanded one-liners, and I just kept laughing. Like, holy cow, he delivered them so great. It was funny.
Yes. Well, I'm also curious to hear what our listeners had to say. And we had a bit more feedback this week than we had in the past couple weeks. So I'm excited to dive into it. Are you?
Yes, let's get to it. All right.
Well, we frequently save Kate for last. So I thought we'd just switch it up a bit and have her first. How's okay. that sound?
You take her away. It's a nice long email. You got a steady voice.
She says, hey guys, so this episode was pretty good. There were some parts that were kind of ridiculous, but then there were some really emotional scenes that were excellent. So I'm giving it a 7 out of 10. And I'm just going to go ahead and say that the reason they went to Leon Yu is stupid. They need the mystical forces of the island to create a weapon, and all the supplies or items they've collected on previous missions, neatly packaged and easy to find, except for the wire strippers, apparently. But then it's not an actual weapon. It's a device that gives Lila superpowers. But why? The monitor could have just given her powers. I know the missions were meant to test Oliver and ensure he was ready to die, but really? they were there for no reason. I mean, we got the full circle with the return to the island, which is cool, and a final goodbye to Oliver's very first teacher, Yafei, which was fun. I actually thought his advice was great, and we did get comic book arsenal when Roy goes Skywalker on us, which is something that happened. But in plot, going to the island was not necessary. And I will say the Queen family progress was the best part of the episode. First, I was a little annoyed. I was frustrated with Oliver because I'd been operating under the assumption that me and William knew that Oliver was going to die in the crisis. So to find out that he has yet to tell them was a bit upsetting. I was also initially frustrated that Mia got so mad. I thought they'd made progress in Russia. But then I heard her points and I really got it this episode. She really was Felicity in mind, heart, and body. Just with Oliver's inability to communicate emotions. She's lashing out due to fear of losing those she loves. Like someone else we know. She grew up fatherless and relatively sheltered. And she blames Oliver for her loneliness. Because she sees his decision to save the world as a selfish choice. It reminded me of season 3 when Felicity refused to let her heartache over him anymore. She never admitted she loved him, despite everyone knowing, because she knew that one day she was going to lose him. And when he came back to her after dying, he's still fighting with the intention of dying. It's only once he fights to live that Felicity fully allows herself to love him. And here, Mia's been battling with herself over Oliver. She clearly loves him, but she keeps pushing him away so that when she loses him, it won't hurt so bad. And she's resentful until William tells her that pushing him away will just make the loss more painful. He has come to accept that Oliver will always sacrifice his life and happiness, and by extension, his family's happiness, to save others. He has learned from Felicity that the best way to deal with the situation is to love and support Oliver during the time they have left. And by telling Mia this, she is able to forgive Oliver. And then she goes to speak with her father. She tells him she hated the fact that he was a hero because she thought that was why she didn't have him. But now she understands it was done out of love for her. The emotional scene was then just punctuated by Oliver telling her that all of his pain and suffering was worth it because it made him a better man. And it gave him the daughter that he adores. The scene was just beautiful. Stephen and Kat McNamara kicked it out of the park because I felt every word they said. I'm excited to see what happens in the crossover.
Oh, so well said, Kate. I loved your opening paragraphs about everything about being on Lian Yu and the whole course of the plot. You're exactly tuning into what we were trying to say in our opening monologue. So thank you for that. Fantastic.
Absolutely. A good kickoff.
All right, next up we have a voicemail from Jennifer Maggio.
Hi, The Flash and Cammy at the Arrow Squad podcast. This is Jen from Long Island, New York, Time Kronos, a.k.a. Yeah, I just wanted to finally get a chance to call in. It's been a while, I know, and I'm like, I hate the fact that this is like the last season of the Arrow. I mean, so far the last season has been really great. You know, I mean, you know, I love that, like, Stephen Amell has been getting so emotional.
Oh, no. We lost her, Cammy.
We lost the Time Kronos. Oh, no.
Oh, no. Okay, I did not know that her message got cut off there. That is all we have from her. Oh, so sorry, Jen. That's unfortunate. Something must have happened in the transfer of your voicemail from online somewhere.
Yeah, what we received from SpeakPipe only had that bit. I pre-listened to it before the show, and I was sad that it got cut off. But next time, if you want to write in, you're welcome to also send the recording to Martin or myself if there are any technical issues.
Yeah, and often a good way around, sometimes a SpeakPipe thing, it has problems. What I do when I send feedback to other podcasts, just either most phones these days have a built-in recorder, or you can download a free one from your app store, whether you're on an iPhone or an Android phone. You just record a voicemail right on your phone and then email us that. And it works far better without any technical problems, I find. God, I'm sorry, Jen. That's not fair. I was excited to hear from you again, and Couldn't wait to hear what you had to say. Darn.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to an email from Dad L. And Dad L says, "Hello, Aero Squad. This episode was so awesome, I'm changing things up with this email. First, the rating is 9.9 red skies. Wow, Dad wow. L. The only reason I didn't give this episode a perfect 10 was the lack of Shadow and the odd plot points. Boy, you're only marking it down 0.1 for that? Perhaps the actor was unavailable, and that's really no fault of the showrunners. And by the way, I still believe that Slade will return. I think they are saving him." Oh, I hope you're right. "The odd plot points were the energy waves coming from the island and the strange resurrections. I mostly overlooked them because this episode was so good. The island has really been a supporting character on the show. Oliver has made his peace with it. He wouldn't be who he is without it. Now, Roy has been physically and perhaps emotionally changed by the island. I think Roy is up to the challenge, and I hope Argus gives him a high-tech prosthetic. The extended tracking shot of the final fight as Oliver fought his way through the gauntlet of baddies was awesome, and Diggle, as always, had Oliver's six. That final talk between them was pulling on the heartstrings. Their relationship reminds me of a proverb in the Bible. There is a friend that sticks closer than a brother." Oh, I like that. "And Oliver and Mia make their peace. What great performances. Stephen Amell has brought such emotion and genuineness in his acting. Now on to Crisis. Dad L, last father of Krypton." Oh, I love your enthusiasm and excitement, Dad L. Yeah, I'm with you. There is so much good stuff in this. We can brush aside the bad points that I started with.
I especially love the inclusion of that Bible verse. It's a really good tie-in and a really good example of what Oliver and Diggle's relationship is like.
Yeah. All right, on to a voicemail from Destiny Dazzler.
"Hi, Real Squad. Destiny Dazzler. I just got done watching the episode. I really enjoyed it this week, which I feel like I've said every week this season. First of all, it was super gruesome and hard to watch. Roy lose his arm. That was really, really hard to watch and made me really emotional. I loved all the speeches that were given in this episode between, like, Oliver and his kids. I thought, like, they made me cry every time. Like, the speech he had with William, the speech he had with Mia, even the speech he had with Diggle, like, all the speeches, the goodbye speeches Oliver gave in this episode made me cry. I think it's going to be really interesting to find out how this all plays out in Crisis, because Oliver is supposed to die. But, isn't there another episode after, like, the Crisis event is over? Isn't, like, episode 10 after the Crisis event is over? So how is there supposed to be a final episode of Arrow if Oliver's dead? So that'll be interesting. I'm just really interested to see how this all plays out. I'll talk to you guys soon. Bye."
There's not only one episode after Crisis, there's two, isn't there, Flash?
There is two episodes after Crisis. Crisis is episode 8, so you've got 9 and 10 to get to say farewell to everybody. And she brings up something that we didn't talk about, and that was the last speech with Oliver and Diggle. That was also on my radar for favorite scene, but I figured 3 was enough that I picked. It was another beautiful moment, just a moment between two brothers, and Diggle telling him, "I'm always going to be there for you, man, and I'm going to stick with you as long as I can. I know you have to end this on your own, but I will be with you as far as I can go." It's such a wonderful moment. All these moments, my eyes were watery. I was just wrapped up in the emotion of it all.
Yeah. Our next piece of feedback is right there with you on the emotional train. Christy leads in by saying, "I don't have a ton to say this week other than I'm feeling so emotional. This episode really felt like the end, and I was getting teary watching Oliver go through his parade of goodbyes, particularly Diggle and Mia. Can't believe it's almost over. I have to talk about Roy for a second. I don't think anyone else has gone through the ringer as much as he has, other than Oliver. Mirakuru, going to prison, living in hiding twice, literally dying and then raised from the pit, and now coming back to help the team only for his arm to be cut off. And he's still so loyal with a great attitude. Hats off to him."
Yeah.
Totally agree. "Finally, some random questions. Shouldn't Mia and William have known Oliver was going to die? I thought in the future they already knew the year he died. Felicity took them to his grave. and how is Yalfae still alive? I was a little confused with how the now magical Leon Yu works. And how exactly is Diggle going to send the kids back to 2040 like Oliver requested? Did the Arrow writers actually think the well scene at the end was a good fit for this episode? I can't wait for Crisis, though. Well, Christy, I'm not sure Arrow writers had too much say with that. I think that was just tacked on to all of our episodes.
Yep. Yeah, her question about Yalfae, I think that was just part of the magic that brought all the other dead people alive. I mean, we haven't seen Yalfae since season one, so if he happened to still be on the island when Prometheus blew it up, then he's being brought back as a ghost, or like I have no idea. I just think it was part of whatever that stuff was, this time realm that they were in. He's just one of the people that was brought back to life.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that.
Yeah.
All right. Last one we got is from Dudu Gaisler, and he says, "Hey, Martin and Cammy, without N, sorry about that last time. How are you?" Oh, you don't have to apologize.
Yeah, Camion is my full name. It's just most people call me Cammy, but the N is a valid part of the name, and mm-hmm. you can call me Camion if you like, or any variation. I think at one point on this podcast, I was going by Cammy the Chameleon when we mm-hmm. all needed superhero names, so anything you toss my way is fine.
Now, we're only 1 week to the big crisis. I haven't seen any trailer of it, so I really don't know what to expect, except all the heroes, the Monitor, the Red Sky, and maybe Nash Wells from the current season of Flash as one of the main villains. I hope it could live up to expectations. Wow, I am impressed you have avoided all trailers, Dudu. That's impressive. It's everywhere. About this episode, I don't understand why William and especially Mia were surprised when Oliver told them what's going to happen during the crisis. They are from the future. They know what happened. Yeah, but it's a different future. It makes me wonder, in their future, did that alternate future we saw, did the crisis actually happen? All they knew, as far as I remember, is that their dad disappeared and never came back. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Anyway, he goes on. I can't say that I have missed Fires, but it was good to see him on this episode because I love the flashback storyline from season one, and also he has a very cool voice. It was very nostalgic for me to see him in Yalfae. Well, I'm glad you remembered. I saw his face, and I'm like, where's that? I don't remember that guy. He doesn't stand out to me. I might have to rewatch season one, Cammy. It really bothers me during the whole season that this episode, why almost everyone believed to the Monitor without giving them any solid proof to do so. Lila talked about Faith, and Oliver, who usually is very suspicious, also believes them because he experienced a time loop. It doesn't seem suitable to their characters. I give this episode a 7 out of 10. Only 3 episodes to the end. Nothing lasts forever, I guess. Sad face. See you at the crisis, Doo-doo.
See you at the crisis. What a good conclusion.
Yes, what a good conclusion. Excellent feedback, as always, everybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, Flash, our next episode is somehow not until January 14th, 2020. The episode 8 of the season and episode 4 of the crisis. But before then, we may see some Arrow characters appear in next week's crisis. Is that right?
That is right. I mean, Oliver sacrificing himself, you have to think that he's going to be at least at the forefront in dealing with everything that's coming, because the Monitor's been dragging him through hell for all of this. So at least Oliver will be there for every single episode, I imagine.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm excited to dive in and watch.
Yeah, me too, totally. I can't wait. I mean, we're not that far away. We've got a few days to go before it kicks off Sunday night with Supergirl, and then Batwoman on Monday night, and then Flash on Tuesday night. So, and you might hear back from us that very week. We'll have to see about that. I think that's all we got, Cammy. I guess I'm signing off, and I'll be back in time for Crisis, because I see the skies are turning red. Flash is signing off.
And this is Cammy. Goodbye.
Arrow Squad is presented by Golden Spiral Media. You can find all our contact info, links, and feedback form at arrowsquad.com. We'd also love to have you leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. If you're looking for other great discussions about your favorite TV shows, check out our partner podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com. As always, please share the show, and thanks for listening.